This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. With just 8 days to go until the election, we're broadcasting on the road with the Values Bus in North Carolina. Coming up on today's edition, Friday's announcement by FBI Director James Comey announcing the reopening of the investigation into Hillary's private email server has rocked the political world, at least part of it. We'll talk about the impact this may have on voters. Jeff Rowe of Axiom Strategies has the results of voter surveys taken over the weekend in key battleground states. And what could the FBI possibly have found that would prompt the unprecedented step of reopening the investigation with less than 2 weeks to go before the election? Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan joins me with that answer. Also, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest will join us for an update on the recovery efforts here in North Carolina and what impact that might have on voter turnout here in the Tar Heel State. And we'll be taking your phone calls a little bit later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more about today's topics. Our guests. Also, let me remind you, great resources there for you as we approach the election. The video that we have that compares the two-party platforms, great resource, about 3 minutes, 40 seconds. You can post it on your Facebook page, send it around to others. Those that might be sitting on the sidelines, show them what's at stake in this election. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. And as I mentioned, we're on the road with the Values Bus in North Carolina. This morning I had the honor of speaking at my alma mater, Liberty University, at their convocation service, and we hit the road. We are in the all-important swing state of North Carolina, where we're reminding Christians what is at stake in this election. We're actually broadcasting from Farmington Heights Church in Wilson, North Carolina, this evening. If you're in the eastern portion of the central part of North Carolina, you might want to join us for some of the events coming up tomorrow. Tomorrow morning we'll be at the Parker's Chapel Free Will Baptist Church in Greenville at 11:30. At 1:45, we'll be at Bojangles in Snow Hill if you want to get a late lunch. And at 2:30, New Testament Baptist Church in Kinston and Grace Baptist Church at 5 in Goldsboro. And then Wednesday, I'll be in Charlotte at the Power Lunch at First Baptist Church. That's Wednesday around noon. All right, and look, you can always keep up with that by going to the website, TonyPerkins.com. There have been multiple 2016 October surprises. The latest is the FBI renewing its investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails after reportedly stumbling on Clinton emails on the computer of former Congressman Anthony Weiner, the estranged husband of Huma Abedin, the assistant of Hillary Clinton. What could the FBI possibly have found that would have prompted this unprecedented step of reopening the investigation with less than 2 weeks to go for the election? Well, someone who might know is a person that has been on this issue from almost day one, the member of the House Judiciary Committee and the House Oversight and Government Committee, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio's 4th Congressional District. Jim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you today, Tony.
Is it possible, Jim, that we may actually be getting down to the issue of discovering and bringing forth the facts regarding Hillary Clinton and her treatment of classified information?
Yeah, who knows? What we do is that the when the FBI came forward, there must be something there. Why else would the director come forward and say we're going to reexamine this and reopen this investigation? After all he's been through, after all the abuse for what I think is a poorly managed case where you had all kinds of unusual things take place in this case, after going through all that, now to come forward, after telling us he wasn't going to reopen the case when we brought things in front of him in some of his committee hearings recently, it must be something pretty darn important. That's at least what I believe is the case.
Now, what we're seeing is that we're told there's 650,000 emails that could be at question here that was on this private computer that was shared by Huma and Anthony Weiner. What possibly could be in this email? There's a lot of emails, but what could be there that they haven't seen yet?
Well, remember on the front of a year ago, I asked Secretary Clinton, when she was in front of the Benghazi committee, I asked her, why don't you agree to allow a neutral third party, like a retired federal judge, come in and examine all the emails so he can decide which ones are personal, which ones are not. And you know, instead of you deciding on the front end, you and your legal team, Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson and her legal team, saying we're going to keep these, and then they destroyed those, and then we're only going to give us part of them, why not let a neutral third party, like a retired federal judge, do that? She wouldn't agree to that. She wanted to control it from the front end. So she kept 30-some thousand emails and then destroyed those. She said they were yoga, and they were wedding plans, and they were personal issues. She wouldn't agree to something to let a federal judge do it. She decided on the front end, what if, now I'm just speculating, but what if those 30,000 are now on this source, this computer, this system? So it could be something like that. It could be something that goes to the, remember Mr. Comey talked about intent. He said he didn't think the intent element, which I thought was there on the classified issue, he didn't think it was met. Maybe there's some emails here that point to intent and cause him to reexamine that issue. The simple truth is we don't know, but both campaigns, and I think the American people would like, the full information out there as quickly as possible. And so let's hope that that's what the FBI does.
So do you anticipate that the FBI is going to come forward with information prior to the election?
I don't know, but based on what Comey has done thus far with his big press conference back in July announcing all the wrong that Secretary Clinton had done, but yet he wasn't going to prosecute, all we have learned since then, all you know, the fact that Loretta Lynch met with Bill Clinton 3 days before the subject of the investigation was interviewed by the FBI, something we've never seen, the fact that five people got immunity, five of them got immunity, no one gets prosecuted, three of the five who got immunity took the fifth in front of Congress. All these things, unusual things, and this whole pattern, and then to come out last week and say, oh I'm going to reexamine the case, I would hope he would come out sometime before the election and tell us what's there. I think the American people deserve that, and again, both campaigns called for that, but we don't know. The truth is, all we know is they're re-looking at this, so it must be something pretty darn important.
True. I think no one questions the fact that there's probably something very significant here for them to reopen this case when the dust had begun to settle on it. But bear in mind, Congressman Jordan, this is still the Obama administration Department of Justice, which doesn't give me great confidence given their track record.
Right. No, I agree. You know, Lois Lerner was not prosecuted. John Koskinen, they defend him. The investigation I thought they did in the IRS was not appropriate. This investigation, the things I just rattled off. Here's the other thing. When have you ever seen the Attorney General announce ahead of time, I'll follow the recommendations of the FBI, even though they haven't given them yet? In fact, I asked her that question under oath. Said, you know, Attorney General, have you ever done that before? She said, no, this is the first and only time. So this whole case was handled different, underscoring what I think is at stake in this election. You know, if Hillary Clinton's the next president, we're going to continue to have a double standard. One standard for you and me, Tony, and a different one for the politically connected, like John Koskinen and Hillary Clinton. If Donald Trump's elected president, I think we're going to get back to a Justice Department focused on justice and not on politics. And that is fundamental. You know, this equal treatment under the law is the way it's supposed to work in our great country. And that is not what we've seen from this Justice Department. So that's one of the huge issues, I think, at stake in this upcoming election.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. We're broadcasting live from Wilson, North Carolina, as the Values Bus is hitting all 100 counties here in the all-important swing state of North Carolina. I'm discussing with Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio Friday's announcement by FBI Director James Comey that they were reopening the investigation to Hillary Clinton and her handling of classified material in our private servers, et cetera, et cetera. Congressman, when you just laid out what we could expect if Hillary Clinton were elected president, if in fact James Comey has discovered something here in this unrelated investigation into Anthony Weiner and his sexting problems, the probability of justice being done if Hillary Clinton is elected president is, in my view, slim to none. I mean, this thing goes away immediately, I would think.
Well, the truth is we don't know. What I think is of most importance, Tony, and I know you understand this, is, and so your listeners, is the next 8 days and what happens on Tuesday, November 8th. We're going to elect the next commander-in-chief. We're going to elect the next president of the United States. I've said all along, my work on the Benghazi committee, that I think Libya alone should disqualify Secretary Clinton from being commander-in-chief. I mean, the fact that she misled the American people about the motive, about the cause of that attack, she knew privately and said privately it was a terrorist attack, but publicly tried to blame it on the video. And worse yet, she told that same story to Tyrone Woods' father and Sean Smith's mother. And it seems to me anyone who will not be square with parents whose kids gave their life for our country should not be the president. So I think the real question is, I hope the FBI brings as much information forward as they can so the American people can know as much as they can going into this election. And I hope Donald Trump wins for a number of reasons. But certainly it's the fact that I don't think Secretary Clinton was straightforward with the American people in the Benghazi issue. What we found out just in the last few weeks, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she says that we should have a borderless hemisphere.
Right.
I mean, one of the things that defines you as a country is you have boundaries.
She refused to answer that question at the last debate, saying, well, that came from hacked emails with, and she said, I was talking about energy. And so she completely maneuvered Chris Wallace on that question and didn't answer it. This issue, though, with this reopening of this investigation, I mean, everybody sees this as very, very significant with, you know, less than 2 weeks left in the election. I know Washington is a very polarized, partisan city, but have you heard anything from your Democratic colleagues that they, too, now are beginning to question the validity of her candidacy given this information?
No, I have not. I mean, all I've seen in the press is the other party defending her. When you look at the whole pattern that she set this thing up to hide information, that's, I think, the whole motivation of why she had this separate server situation put together. It was to hide information. They got caught. When they got caught, they said, we're not going to let some neutral third party look at it. We're going to do it ourselves, and we'll decide, her and her legal team decided on the front end which ones they kept, which ones we got. The ones they kept, they destroyed, except maybe now, maybe they're part of the ones that were just found, and that's why they reopened it. But they decided on the front end, and then all along she's told us things that turned out not to be true. Mm-hmm. Several things. She said them to us, and she said some of them under oath when she testified a year ago. So I think when you put all that together, this is, again, why the American people need as much information. I think the American people are sharp. I think they're going to decide to vote for Donald Trump, and he's going to be our next president.
All right, Congressman Jim Jordan, we're going to have to leave it there. We're up against a break. Thanks so much for joining us on this Monday afternoon. Go out and do some trick-or-treating, okay?
All right. Thanks, Tony. Take care.
All right, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio's 4th Congressional District, also, by the way, the chairman of the Freedom Caucus. All right, coming up on the other side of the break, we'll talk about the importance of the battleground states and how this could impact voters in those states. Jeff Rowe of Axiom Strategies has the results of a recent survey taken over the weekend, so it's fresh stuff. We're going to talk with him about that. Also, we're going to be taking your phone calls a little bit later. We're going to hear from the lieutenant governor of the Tar Heel State here in North Carolina about their recovery efforts when it came to the recent Hurricane Matthew, and how that might affect voter turnout in this all-important swing state. We're going to talk with him about that. And we're going to be taking your phone calls. A lot more to come here on this special edition of Washington Watch, the road edition, as we're on the bus, the Bayou's bus, making our way across the state of North Carolina. Don't go away. We're back with more right after this.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Two similar articles written by conservative young women in the past week make a point that's worth an extended look. Gracie Olmsted notes at TheFederalist.com, politicians sell us a false gospel. They tell us that if only we elect the right candidate, all our problems will be solved. Liberty McCarter at TheStream.org echoes Gracie's premise and makes this appeal to her own generation, quoting, "No candidate, no matter how good, can adequately address it all. That's because solving such problems will be the work of a generation of everyday people, not a president who sits in the Oval Office for 4 or 8 years," unquote. When you step out of the polling booth next month, you'll still be surrounded by broken people who need the love of Christ. Only when God's church begins to fulfill its purpose in the world will we see change happen. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we noticed with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along with us on the ride this Monday afternoon. The Values Bus making its way across the state of North Carolina, an important swing state in the upcoming election. 8 days away. I do hope if you have not yet voted, sometimes you can vote early in some states, many states. If you've not yet voted, I pray and hope that you plan on voting next Tuesday and that you will be voting right. You need resources? Go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, the announcement Friday of the FBI reopening the investigation into the illegal handling of classified material is literally sending shockwaves across the nation. As we're just 8 days away from the presidential election, what impact might this announcement have in these swing states? Well, with us now is a man who knows a lot about the importance of the battleground states, the swing states, Jeff Rowe. He's a principal and founder of Axiom Strategies, a research and campaign consulting firm. Axiom, in collaboration with Remington Research Group, has studied election results in these 8 battleground states. And they did some surveying over the weekend to see what's happening with voters. Jeff, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Tony.
All right, Jeff, tell me, what happened as a result of Friday's announcement? Has it moved voters at all in these important battleground states?
It has. What we've seen, typical October surprises, it takes a little bit to bake into the electorate's psyche. We see this all the time. It fully won't be felt until probably 4 or 5 days after the weekend that it happens. But we already see some movement. And to be clear, I don't believe anyone today is choosing between, or very few, are choosing between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. What the real decision is our undecided voters, how are they going to vote, and are they going to vote?
Right.
And then second is the third party, Gary Johnson, the support that he's gotten, which has really been outsized for a typical third-party candidate. We know, all the way going back to the convention in the summer and even into the fall, he was in double digits. That number is now down. I think over the course of this week, we can see that number continue to erode. And as we know from polling, he is getting the dominant share of his votes come from Trump. And so that's where we see the movement. We've seen in Florida just from Sunday to Sunday, we've seen a 4-point increase in Florida. We've seen 1 point really all across the board, with the exception of North Carolina, and that's within the margin of error where Trump is leading by 2. He was leading by 3. But you take a look at an important state, and I think it's critical on this, what is the path to victory? The Trump team needs to put another state in play. If you take that they were going to win Florida and Nevada, where they're doing well, in Ohio, where they've been up for quite some time, Iowa, you know, some of these states are traditional battleground states, that's enough to get them to 266. But then they've got to pick one up. They've got to pick up a Pennsylvania or a Wisconsin or a maybe even a Virginia, or what we've been looking at lately is Colorado. And there we see Colorado has a Clinton, was up 2, and now she's up 1. And that's a state that I don't think at the beginning that anybody would have predicted to be so close. And then you see Wisconsin, which was a 5-point margin state for Clinton, is now 4 points, so back into the margin of error. So we see movement really across the board, and you see it in national polls as well. But the national poll, as we know, when George W. Bush had his drinking and driving brought up at the very end, it didn't really do much nationally. It was about a point and a half that you saw the polls move.
Mm-hmm.
But importantly, he lost, you know, 5 or 6 points with his base in Florida, which thrust us into a hanging Chad election. And so that's really where to watch it, and that's why we went back in the field to take a look and see how the dynamics of these battleground states are performing with the new news.
Well, Jeff Rowe, what I talked about this Friday. I was actually on with Lou Dobbs, and I think it's to what your earlier point was at the very beginning. It's the undecideds. I see that Hillary Clinton supporters are not going to be moved by this because they've been supporting a corrupt regime for 8 years, so I don't see why they would be moved off of her. I do think in addition to the independents, though, a segment of voting, a very important voting segment that you're familiar with, a number of these social conservative evangelicals that have been sitting on the sidelines or agitating against Trump, they now are, I think they're in a dilemma because they're now confronted with squarely confronted with the reality that this agitation could facilitate the election of the queen of corruption if they vote for third party or stay out of the election. Do you see any movement in that category?
We do, and I think you're exactly right, and it's profound in the fact that this has been posed as a binary choice, and a lot of people want to throw up different kind of red herrings that it wasn't, and that you could actually, you know, not make that choice and not have your hands clean from the election. But as we know now, this is becoming a very behavioral, typical election cycle from the Democrat standpoint. It's not the Obama aggressive turnout operation that we've seen in his election and re-election. It is really kind of a base Democrat vote. And as this gets down to the wire, we're staring at what is going to be 4 years of this type of back and forth with FBI and law enforcement agencies looking at her. And so therefore, I think we've seen some consolidation. To put it in a numerical standpoint, Mr. Trump has moved from 72% of Republican support to 84% just in the last 10 days. And that has helped people up and down the ballot, particularly in these swing state senators that are up for re-election or open seats like in Nevada, where the base coming home to Trump has a measurable impact on control of the Senate as well. So the rising tide floats all boats analogy comes into play.
So,
and if he gets to 90%, he's going to win.
So, Jeff, we're at 10 seconds before we go to a break, but you're saying that Anthony Weiner's email and his sexting scandal could very well be what secures the Senate for the Republicans.
That's absolutely correct.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Jeff Rowe, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Very informative and insightful. We'll be touching base with you probably in the days ahead. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for everything you do.
All right, Jeff Rowe, interesting stuff. I mean, you look at the numbers. Now, look, we're 8 days away. I've said this many times in politics, a day is a lifetime and a lifetime a day. Things can change overnight. But look, people are being, as I said, confronted with the reality that they have to vote. And they could be enabling one of the most corrupt administrations in history to ascend to the White House. I mean, think about it. Also, party platforms, policies. Look at the policies. Very clear. All right, when we come back, the lieutenant governor from the state of North Carolina, Dan Forrest, is going to join us. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, some important economic data coming out this week. Some of the economic data that is really going to give us a real and a good indication, a little bit, of what we can expect third quarter in GDP. Now, productivity is the biggest number. Remember, productivity, and that's coming out Thursday. Productivity has been negative for a while. It was negative last look. It was negative 0.6%, over a half of 1%. So they're expecting it to be all the way up to 1.8%. Frankly, based on durable good numbers that we've seen, manufacturing numbers, I find that almost impossible to believe. But what's this going to be about Thursday? 6 days or something like that to the election? By the time this number rolls around, it's going to be very, very important for the election. And we all know that the Obama administration, Hillary Clinton, need all the help they can get. So I wouldn't expect a lot of these numbers, like the GDP number that we got last week, to be anything but a politicized number. But productivity, an important number. And then, of course, we get non-farm payrolls on Friday. They're expecting 170,000. I would expect, again, for the same political reasons, a number to be higher than that. We get an unemployment number that's kind of irrelevant. We got personal income and personal spending. Personal income missed expectations. But the headline reads, personal income climbs. I don't think 0.3% is a climb, and it missed what they were expecting. Construction spending is also another one we'll watch closely.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us on this Monday afternoon. As I mentioned, we're on the values bus. Yes, on the values bus in North Carolina. The plan of FRC Action and our partner with Concerned Women for America. We're hitting all 100 counties in the Tar Heel State. This is, as you just heard from Jeff Rowe, this state's a toss-up in the presidential, but there's some really important elections here in the state. State officials that are up for re-election. Of course, North Carolina has taken a strong stand against President Obama and his regender definition and what the mayor of Charlotte tried to do. And so it's been totally distorted. But they've had some great leaders that have stood strong. And of course, a couple of weeks ago, North Carolina, as other states on the Northeast Coast, hit by Hurricane Matthew. And we had the governor on last week talking about the cleanup effort. And joining us now to talk more about that, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. Dan, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you on.
Well, Tony, it's great to be with you. And welcome to North Carolina, even though I know life on a bus is a little bit crazy, but we're glad to have you in our state.
Well, thank you. And occasionally I get to look out the window, kind of like one of those dogs hanging their head out the pickup truck, looking at the leaves of the trees turning color. Beautiful state, beautiful time of year. Dan, you were personally affected by Hurricane Matthew.
Yeah, we had a giant oak tree fall on our house, and it crushed half the house. And it was just a beautiful thing, the hand of God on display. It's like Psalm 91 just being played out in living color for our family. We were all there. We were all under the tree. I mean, it could have been a complete disaster for everybody, but nobody was hurt, and it's just property damage. They'll rebuild the house. We'll be out of there for about 9 months, but they'll rebuild it, and it'll all be back to normal at some point.
Yeah, in the meantime, you've been busy helping out other residents in the state here. And give us an update. How are things coming together in terms of the recovery effort, getting people back into their homes and back to work?
Well, I think, Tony, you know better than most people because you've lived through it personally, and your state got hammered as well recently. So you know better than most. It's a slow, slow process to recovery. I mean, the number one issue is, I'm sure the governor spoke with you last week, was just finding temporary housing for all the people that are displaced. And even finding those folks and where they are. You know the ones that are in shelters that have probably the most dire need, but then there's all the folks that are living with family and living with friends that still need temporary housing, and that process is slow, and as you know, the process with FEMA is slow, and we have done, I think, a great job. The governor's done a phenomenal job getting all the homes assessed. I mean, we're at about 44,000 homes assessed as of today. And so that's a good thing. The governor's put together a task force, which actually has its first meeting tomorrow, that's led by his chief of staff, Thomas Stith. And they'll start putting a plan together for the longer-term recovery when the media goes away, as you know, and everybody right. kind of goes back about their life and forgets about this.
And it doesn't go away overnight. The attention right. may go away, but people will be dealing with this for months to come. And we've kind of hit that point. We're probably 8 weeks ahead of you. We had our flooding back in August. But what happens is, you know, people are living with family. That works for maybe 6 to 8 weeks, and then yeah. you know, it gets a little cramped, and folks are looking right. for the space that they need. And so it's there's a lot that has to be done. Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, Lieutenant Governor Forrest, the state of North Carolina being such an important state nationally, yeah. of course, you have state elections as well. What's the sense of how this impacts voter turnout? Because that's even been an issue at home, because we've had to move in Louisiana. We have to move voting locations. People are living in different parts of the state. How do you think that's going to impact voters here in North Carolina?
Well, it's obviously going to have some impact. I mean, there's a lot of communication going on in that regard now. Obviously, you had places like places that were polling places that were flooded and that sort of thing. But I think that was generally pretty minimal. And so, I mean, as when it comes to the displaced families and that sort of thing, yeah, there's going to be some impact. But, you know, Tony, we have over 10 million people here in the state of North Carolina. It's going to be a much more minimal impact than a major impact.
Well, that's good. Well, we do hope that we've got several stations here in North Carolina that carry Washington Watch. We want to encourage folks to get out and vote in this all-important election. What can folks outside of North Carolina do to be helpful to the folks here?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, finding those organizations that are helping out, the folks like Samaritans First, the folks like the Baptist Men's Group. I know when you guys were flooded, we had people all over North Carolina that headed down to your state right. to help out with recovery. And the same thing is going to be needed here in our state. That's the biggest thing right now. Obviously, keep these folks in your prayers. As you said, it's going to be a long, long, long road to recovery. And, you know, just be very prayerful as we go through this process.
Well, we absolutely will do that. Dan Forrest, thanks so much for joining us. Always great to talk with you.
Thanks, Tony. I hope you have a great day. Enjoy your time in North Carolina.
I absolutely will. Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest of North Carolina, and as he mentioned, organizations like Samaritan's Purse, the Baptist Men, other faith-based organizations that are working in these states. I mean, Samaritan's Purse has been housed at our church, Greenville Springs Baptist, since the flood there, and doing a great job. Franklin Graham, tremendous man, whole organization. Folks, I encourage you to support organizations like that. If you can't go, you can give so that others can. So be prayerful for those affected by Matthew and the other natural disasters we've had. But if you live in North Carolina, folks, make preparations to vote. All right, we're going to come back and open up the phone line, so don't go away. We're back after this.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit, is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, FAMILIES, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website twholyland.com. Come see the Land of the Bible with us in March.
On November 8th, our nation will choose a president who will serve as commander-in-chief to protect our country and allies from terrorist attack, and who will nominate the next Supreme Court justice. Voters will also be choosing national and state legislators and officials at the local level. AFA Action urges you to learn which candidates would support religious liberty or strengthen national security. Be an informed voter. Visit AFAAction.net to get the AFA Action Voter Guide, and then vote.
Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, the president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Wesley Biblical Seminary provides a solid foundation based upon the inerrancy of the Bible and the call to holy living. Online or at our Jackson, Mississippi or Greenwood, Indiana campuses, our academically rigorous learning community will add incredible value to your Christian experience. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where faith and learning ignite with passion for Christ. WBS.edu.
Does the changing of the seasons have you thinking about the future? If you're feeling like you can't contribute as you have in the past, maybe we can offer some help. There are many ways to make an end-of-the-year charitable gift. A cash donation comes with the advantage of a tax deduction. Transferring appreciated stock can allow you to avoid capital gains taxes. You could leave a gift through a will or trust by naming AFA as a beneficiary. And a charitable gift annuity provides a deduction for today as well as guaranteed income for life. As 2016 draws to a close, let us show you how to maximize your year-end giving for yourself and for AFA. Visit AFAFoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345. If the economy has you worried about what the future may bring, giving through the AFA Foundation could help. Again, that's AFAFoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
You are listening to Washington Watch, and I am your host, Tony Perkins, and privileged to be your host here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Hey, been a busy day. We started out with the Values Bus at Liberty University. Great to be back on campus there. I had the privilege of speaking at their convocation there this morning, and it was a great time with the kids. 10,000 young people. I tell you, Liberty is exploding with growth. And it's exciting to see the young people that they're putting out that are world changers. So I had a good time with them. In fact, got to see a number of the students that came down to Louisiana to help out with the flood effort, relief effort. So it was good to see them and reconnect. All right, this is what I want to talk about. And I'm going to open up the phone lines. I want to know if since Friday, I know it's Friday you've gone to church over the weekend. I was in Phoenix this weekend, speaking at a couple of events, spoke at a church yesterday. Great folks out there. That's a lot of activity. In fact, one of the presidential candidates was out there as well on Saturday. But as this information has come to the forefront, I'm wondering if this has had any kind of impact upon your friends, those that may have been undecided, sitting on the sidelines, undecided about whether or not they were going to vote, or thinking they could just sit this election out or vote for a third party, which, you know, would essentially be a, you know, would help one of the other candidates, one of the main candidates. So here's what I want to know is, have you seen, heard any movement as a result of this for those that were just kind of, as I said, sitting on the sidelines? See, I think that this now puts a number of these conservative agitators who have been saying, you know, we can't vote for either one of these candidates. Because both of them, as I've said, both of them have problems, okay? Some have described one as being a crook and, you know, the other being a creeper. I mean, look, we got character issues on both sides. And that's why we've said focus on the platforms, look at the policies they've embraced. But now we have an unprecedented effort by the FBI to reopen this investigation, which, as I said, those on the right who are, you know, agitating are now squarely confronted with the reality that they could be facilitating the election of someone who is, I mean, obviously you're not guilty until proven so. You're innocent until proven guilty. But, I mean, the reality that there's so much smoke here, there's got to be fire. So those folks are going to be facilitating this. Anyway, I want to know, has this had any impact on folks you've been talking to? Do you see movement? 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. If you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins, you can tweet it there as well. Let's go to Texas where Kelly is on the line. Kelly, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me, Tony. Thank you for all the work you do, you and the Family Research Council. I definitely think, and I've noticed with a few coworkers and a few close friends that I think they're starting to see the corruption that is the Clinton machine. But I try, but they seem surprised by all the revelations that come out about the email and all that, and I try to explain to them, you can't be surprised by this when they support the most hypocritical abortion regulations. That you can't be surprised that they themselves are hypocrites. It's a crime to murder someone, but you support the murder of someone who hasn't even had a chance to live.
You know, Kelly, that's a really good point. And I go back to, you know, my days in politics, being in office and dealing directly with candidates. I'm not a single issue person. Okay, and most Christians are not, okay? They're not single issue. The media likes to portray them as single issue. But if a candidate is right on the life issue, there's a high probability that they're going to be right on most of the other issues. For me, life is the starting point. I'm concerned about all the other issues, national security. I'm concerned about the economy and all of that. But for me, the starting point is life. And if someone is wrong on that, then there's very little that I'm going to be in agreement with them on, most likely. And so I think that's extremely important, what you just said, to point that out. Look, again, I go back to the policies, go back to the party platforms, and there could not be a clearer contrast between the two parties than on that one issue alone, Kelly. That's the issue of life. Kelly, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate you calling. All right, let's go to Alabama, where Aaron is on the line. Aaron, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
What are you hearing and seeing out there among your friends? Any movement?
Oh, yeah. People are definitely looking at Trump and can't believe. My main issue is why is this even an issue? And why are we even opening up a new investigation? Bottom line is she broke the law. Why are we even looking into a new investigation? Why are we even looking at new emails? We already see the emails. She broke the law, period.
Right.
Go after her.
Well, I mean, and that's been the point of members of Congress. Jim Jordan has made that point. Others have made that point. I mean, go back. He just mentioned, you know, Benghazi. That's enough there to disqualify her to be president. But the significance here, Aaron, is that the director of the FBI, who gave her essentially a clean bill of health, and saying that, well, it was some mishandling, but the prosecutor would never take this forward, is now coming back saying, wait a minute, we've got to reopen this investigation. So to take that step communicates what you said most of us already know, that there was corruption, there was illegal activity. Now, those who have been, and this has been my point, this is a point I made with Jeff Rowe earlier, this is not going to move people off of Hillary Clinton. I mean, look, these are people that have supported one of the most corrupt administrations in the history of this country. I mean, you go through the scandal, the IRS, the Benghazi, the Fast and Furious, you know, just one scandal after another, Solyndra. Where this has an effect, Aaron, are those individuals that are just saying, well, it doesn't really make a difference. You know, it doesn't matter who gets elected. I'm just not going to vote, or I'm going to make a protest vote and send a message. No, if you do that, you are facilitating the elevation of someone now that you know, the curtain's been pulled back. Again, you're innocent until proven guilty, but for the FBI to take this step this late in the election suggests that something is pretty, pretty significant. Aaron, thanks so much for calling and for listening. 866-372-7234. Let's go to North Carolina, and let's talk to Tony. Tony, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm loving your state.
Yeah, we had a little damage here during the storm, but everything's good. I was going to vote for Hillary. I had made my decision I was going to vote for her, but all this stuff keeps coming out. It keeps coming back up, the things that she's done wrong. And it seems like the government don't want to prosecute her. And I thought she was free and clear, and I was thinking she might be a good candidate. But now I'm going more towards Trump, and I believe I'm going to have to vote for Trump because she is so corrupt and crooked that I just can't stand with her no more. And all my friends are talking the same thing at work and at home. So everybody in my community is going towards Trump now.
Now, Tony, let me ask you, because a lot of folks in North Carolina have already voted because early voting has been taking place. Have you voted already or any of your friends voted yet?
No, I live in Lumberton, North Carolina. And
You guys were hit pretty hard by that flood, too.
Yeah, we were hit pretty hard, and I haven't got the chance to get down yet. A lot of the communities where I'm living at right now are going to go out and start voting here shortly. Now that the polls are open, doing early voting, but a majority of everybody I talked to that was going for her are now switching to Trump because of all the stuff that she's doing. If she'd have been in the military, she'd have been charged and she'd be in prison right now.
Yeah, but, well, we've seen that happen, actually, to military leaders who did far less than what she did. You're absolutely right. Tony, was your home flooded there in Lumberton?
Yes, it was.
Okay, so where are you living at right now?
I am staying with a friend right now.
Okay, all right. Well, Tony, thanks for calling. We'll be praying for you as you try to put the pieces back together. I know what that's like. We've seen that in our community back home in Louisiana. So thanks so much for listening and calling and sharing your thoughts on the election. And by all means, make sure you do get out and vote and get your friends to go out and vote as well. Tony, thanks so much for listening. All right, you're listening to Washington Watch. We're going to work in a few more phone calls here. We're going to go all the way to Texas, where Michael is on the line. Michael, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, and thank y'all so much for all y'all do. It's just fabulous that you get the truth out, and that's really my constant prayer is for the truth, the real truth, to be out. And then, you know, it's up to us after that.
Absolutely. You know, well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
So, but yes, I have noticed people that were on the fence or even conservatives that had just hesitated about Trump. I think this seemed to be the tipping point. And they're saying, like, oh, even if I have to hold my nose and vote, I'll go vote for him. So.
That's what I predict is going to be the outcome of this, is that it's going to confront many of those who were just kind of standing on the sidelines with the reality that we're looking at major corruption here. And is that something that we want to knowingly advance to the highest office in this country? And I'm hopeful, Michael, that many people will see it for what it is and as a mistake to do that. Michael, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate you calling in here on Washington Watch. Let's go to Indiana, where Michelle is on the line. Michelle, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for taking my call. I was on the fence about Trump. I was Ted Cruz all the way, and when Ted Cruz didn't get the nomination, I was like, I'm not either voting or I'm going to vote for Hillary. And I seen something on Facebook that changed my mind. It said, if you owned a business, would you hire somebody that was under investigation by the FBI? And I thought, no, I wouldn't. So why would I want my president to be under investigation by the FBI?
Hmm.
That kind of changed my mind.
That's interesting. That's an interesting way of putting it. I actually had not thought of it directly in that context, but that's true. Would you know, if you're a business owner, would you hire somebody that's under investigation by the FBI? Probably not. So why would you then vote for them for the highest position in the land? Good question, Michelle. Thanks so much for calling and sharing that. All right, 866-372-7234. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. And we're going to go to Missouri, where David is on the line. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Just wanted to say that I'm in Missouri, a state that typically goes red. But even some of the friends that I have that were thinking, well, I don't want to violate my conscience. I think this is going to be tough for me to vote for Trump. Even as the nominee, I think maybe I'll ride in Ted Cruz, maybe go Gary Johnson. They've really been affected by the FBI results that we've seen, the opening of the investigation, and saying, at some level, I've got to protect the generations that are going to come after me with all of the legislation that gets passed, Supreme Court nominees, all of those things are impactful to the point where I've got to essentially change my vote. I've got to vote for Donald Trump because it's a two-horse race right now, and I don't want Hillary Clinton in office.
Yeah. You know, and I heard that over the weekend, even out in Arizona, as I was talking with people that were saying essentially the same thing. I mean, this is, it's not an easy, it's just not easy for anybody. It's a difficult choice, but when you're confronted with the reality of what we're looking at, and again, I think what happened on Friday has provided greater clarity. It's not an issue of, well, we think this might be, or this is just Republicans, or this is just conservatives saying this. This is the Obama administration Department of Justice, who had given her a clean bill of health, a pass, even though many were concerned about it, and we are told that many career agents opposed that because of the overwhelming evidence, but now they've come back and revisited. Again, remember, this is the Obama administration Department of Justice, okay? That should tell you something. David, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate you being a Washington Watch listener. I mean, it tells you one thing, is I don't take anything for granted. I don't think we should do any victory laps about this, because it's far from over. I really would like to see a grand jury, this information turned over to a grand jury and let them pursue it. I don't trust the Obama administration. But it does say something of significance is happening here. All right, folks, we're going to be on the road here in North Carolina tomorrow and Wednesday. And so tune in again tomorrow. We'll give you an update as we make our way around the state. Until then, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.